WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively looking at this election on June 2nd as an extremely important event here in Baltimore, especially with no football, baseball, lacrosse to speak of. Don Moeller is our partner in crime, and of course, former Baltimore County executive here at Baltimore Positive. We hope everybody's out there subscribing, not only for the mayor candidates, but also for all the university presidents and other civic leaders, including the arts and museums that we had on here this month. We want to give a shout out to our friends at State Fair in Catonsville for all that they do, staying open, curbside. We were hoping to get together and get all the mayor candidates together back in April. We're doing it one by one here, but we're picking up curbside. We've had everybody down at Fadley's picking up curbside, as well as shipping off those crab cakes anywhere in the country. You can ship Fadley's. Also, Moeller & Gary Realty, closing deals, real estate, still being transacted. We're still selling homes, still doing it online, and Moeller & Gary Realty are doing that. Don Moeller joins us now with another one of our contestants. So you want to be a mayor of Baltimore at this point. And I know we've had a lot of questions for a lot of folks, and I know we're looking forward to having the current city council president on right now, Don.
Absolutely. Looking forward to having the president of city council, Brandon Scott, back with us. He's a veteran of Baltimore Positive. Brandon, we got 1 month to go. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling like Baltimore is going to get leadership that's going to show a new way forward to Baltimore. I'm feeling great. I'm hopeful that all your listeners and their families are as safe as possible as we deal with this COVID-19 pandemic, and that both you and Nasha Don, that your families are safe as well.
Well, for you and getting ready for this thing, we chatted with almost everyone 6 weeks ago. We did not chat with you. You were very busy on the front lines of COVID in the early going. As a candidate for mayor and as a guy holding a pretty full-time gig, from what I can tell online, and the educational process of these last 8 weeks for our city and moving an election, this was not the timeline we had when we got together with you last October and talked about and had some crab cakes, as I remember, talking about you changing buses going to Mervo through Lexington Market every day.
Yes, sir, we did. Down at Fayley's, a lot has happened since then. Of course, Lexington Market has been demolished as we rebuild a new Lexington Market, but we clearly have had the COVID-19 pandemic. But still, we know that nothing has changed when you think about what I said then, sir, that this is the most important election in the history of Baltimore, is even more so now that after enduring COVID-19, because it's not just about who the next mayor is going to be, but what kind of mayor they're going to be and what they're going to stand for and what they're going to do for the city of Baltimore.
Well, Mr. President, I want to pick right up there, because Nestor said you're on the front lines of this thing, and I guess when you're running for office, we'll talk about that a little bit. It can be a good thing, it can be a bad thing. You'll talk about, I think, why you think it's a good thing. But 6-7 weeks ago, you didn't foresee a city that was going to be in a fiscal crisis because of an unprecedented pandemic with declining city revenues, really difficulty making payroll, keeping the city running, and at the same time knowing you're going to have to come out on the other end with some help for small business. Give our listeners and voters a sense of why Brandon Scott's the guy to be able to shepherd the city through what's really going to be a very difficult time.
Yeah, listen, thank you for that, Don. It's a great question. What you get in Brandon Scott, what the citizens of Baltimore are going to get in Brandon Scott, is someone, Don, as you know, having been one of those people before, who has worked his way up through city government, who understands how it is to be that bottom-level government employee who's just working to serve the citizens of Baltimore and make sure that they get the service that they need and that their taxes that they pay entitle them to. And also a worker who was there when we went through the Great Recession, and who was one of those people who was furloughed and understands how that impacts. And as someone, again, it's different for me than everyone else, because I grew up poor and black in Baltimore during this generation. I'm the only person in this race, Don and Nestor, that's a graduate of Baltimore City Public Schools in this millennia. It's different for me. It's different when you live it on every side of it, and now you've worked your way up through government, understanding, working in the mayor's office, working in the council president's office, becoming a council person, becoming the council president, understanding how budgets are made, how you have to make tough decisions, how you're going to have to not do what was done before. What was done during the Great Recession is that the budget was balanced on the backs of the people who needed it the most. Because what did they do? They closed rec centers. They closed fire companies. They did things that we did not need to do. We need a leader who has all that institutional knowledge, but is also wants to build a new and better way for Baltimore, who will do the tough work, who will be able to bring everyone in the city together. And you know, you've seen it. The polling has shown over and over and over again, there's only one person in this race that had double-digit support, white and black. The only person that can communicate, young, old, rich, poor, gay, straight. And when you're going through a time like this, you need someone that can bring the city together, that has that experience, but also it's not the time for us to go back. The time for Baltimore is time for Baltimore to move forward with leadership that has that understanding and has the capability day one to operate and function and stand on the shoulders of the people who work hard to get Baltimore to the point where we are now to take it to our highest heights.
Brandon, you understand the inside and the works of this. Where's the money coming from, and how will you delegate that differently than, let's say, Pew did or Jack is, and he's only been there a short period of time. I don't think it's a full report card on him. But on previous administrations right. And where that money, to your point, things have been taken away. I live in the city, too. I see things going away and services going away as well. You know, I don't even see the trash being picked up in the harbor right now in the middle of COVID. As I walk around. So money. I mean, we talk about fiscal crisis and deficits, and Don's spoken so much to the other candidates about that. I wanted to jump that early because you're one of the guys inside of this that has access to all of this and is trying to push this thing forward from the city council level.
Yeah, thank you. And actually, I'll have the clear picture tomorrow morning as the mayor and his team is going to present the updated budget to the Board of Estimates tomorrow morning, so we'll be able to give you the exacts. But we know there are going to be shortfalls in revenue. We know that clearly because people are not working and things are not happening. And what you're going to have to do, what we're going to need to do, is go and comb every single agency, making sure first, as Don would do, before you talk about cutting anything, making sure that we can get rid of the fat, right? Vacant positions, things like that are there, not being filled, making sure that we are doing things first responsibly before you impact any services. Thinking about also, hey, we have a rainy day fund for a reason. This is the rainiest of rainiest days. This is a monsoon, so to speak, right? We're going to have to consider that's going to have to be on the table as well. And then you have to go and look and make sure that when you're making those tough decisions about how there might have to be some change to services, you have to do that, Nestor, with an eye of understanding what COVID-19 has exposed. And COVID-19 has further exposed the inequities in Baltimore, and that we are people are being hard hit who couldn't afford it in the first place. And when you're making and thinking about not just this fiscal year budget that has to be approved by the end of June, but the next one is going to probably be just as impacted, and make sure you're being responsible in how you're going through that, but also going with the eye of understanding that, as Don pointed out, we're also going to have to try to help out our businesses and our communities, make sure that we're still working with our cultural institutions and partners so that they who have also have suffered, and we're going to have to. The next mayor is going to have to work with mayors across the country. You know that I was the former chair of the National League of Cities, Large Cities Council, to go to D.C. and say, you guys have to step up and help cities out directly as well.
Brandon, I've known you for a while, followed your career, obviously. There is a passion in your voice that grows day by day, and I would imagine, you know, normally when we're together, we can sort of make eye contact with one another, but I can imagine Nestor hears it as well. I hear a sense of urgency in your voice and in your appeal that is a little different from the Brandon Scott that people have come to know, this sort of calm, steady-as-you-go guy. Is that urgency driven by the state of affairs in the city right now?
That urgency is driven not just by the state of affairs of the city right now, Don. That's the same urgency that I've had. But now, when you have what we're having right now, people have to understand the severity of this situation. That urgency is the same urgency that caused me to lead the 300 Men March movement, the largest anti-violence movement that Baltimore City has ever seen for years in Baltimore, long before anyone else in this race was concerned or talking about violent crime. That urgency is the same urgency that led me to put out that big policy proposal when I first became council president. The first of his time that included, as you know very well, changing some of the structure of city government, including creating the position of a city administrator, much like the county administrator position that you're very familiar with, because Baltimore is at a breaking point. And if someone who understands how it is to be on the bottom in Baltimore, who lived in a neighborhood that's forgotten or was forgotten unless it was Preakness, unless you have someone like that in leadership, then you won't have anyone that understands why we need to change the way we operate and why we have to take this very seriously, Don, because it could break our city, and in particular, it can break our neighborhoods where people are struggling to survive as is.
Well, one of the, and for those just tuning in, we are with Baltimore City Council President Brandon Scott. Wants to be mayor on June the 2nd, as Nestor and I will say, democracy is even distance, Nestor. We can say democracy is what? It is not.
A spectator sport. We can wash our hands and we can vote too, and we can do it in the mail.
We can wash our hands and we can vote.
I washed my hands and voted in the 7th a couple weeks ago. Absolutely.
Mr. President, you've been talking about so many of these issues for a long time. Let's rapid fire go through some of them. It's impossible. Nestor would punch me through the phone if we don't start with crime, because it's number one on every person's list. We talked with former Mayor Schmoke the other day, president of the University of Baltimore. He said, Don, even today, going back decades, in Baltimore City, it's always about crime and grime. Why should people trust Mayor Brandon Scott to get the crime turned around and make this city safer?
First and foremost, again, is different for me. When you saw your first shooting before you were 10 years old, when you've lost your friends, when you've seen people get shot, when you've had to duck from those bullets, when you had that gun placed in your face and you've been robbed, it's different. It's different for me than everyone else because I actually lived it. This isn't something I read in a book or that I saw on the news or that I saw on HBO on the wire or on the corner. That was my life. And that's why I'm here. That's why I dedicated my life to serving Baltimore, because I don't want people to have to live like that. But also, remember, who's been doing it? Who's the one that's been out front saying, we need a comprehensive strategy to deal with gun violence, and had a knockdown, drag-out fight with Mayor Pugh about that and told them, until they get serious about it, we're going to have this issue, because in Baltimore, you know, the police department only has to listen to one person. That's the mayor. Who was the person that said we needed that? Who was the person that said that we needed a focus on violent repeat offenders and a group violence reduction strategy the way that every big city has reduced crime has done it? That was me. Who was the person that said, hey, you guys are arguing about whether the state's attorney or the police department's at fault for these gun offenders being released, but no one knows? Who was the person that last year got a position into the budget so that someone could analyze that? Who was the person who said, hey, we need to make sure that we're targeting gun traffickers and straw purchasers as well and add them to our gun offender registry list? Who has been the person that every day, every night, the one that people have taken pictures of at crime scene and homicides, the person who's been speaking at the funerals of all these people, the person who spent hours at night in neighborhoods, walking around, no police protection, me and a group of my friends to say, we also have to step up? That's been me. So you know when I get there and I actually have the power and I don't have to ask the mayor to do something that they have failed to do, that I'm going to do it because I'm going to own it. I'm not going to say it's not my responsibility because in Baltimore City, absolutely it's the mayor's responsibility. I won't have to wait. I won't have to pass laws to say we need a crime plan. I'm going to get there in the first day and every day. Every agency is going to know, from the police commissioner down to the public works director, is going to know that what they're doing to save lives in Baltimore is the first thing I'm going to think about when I get up in the morning, the last thing I'm going to think about when I go to sleep at night, and it better be the same thing for them.
Brandon, I don't know that we talked about the aerial surveillance 6 months ago when we first got together. It was kind of early in your journey to do this and running for mayor, and we thought the election was going to be back in April. It's become a hot topic. I live downtown. No one's leaving the house right now, but I always say, you know, if that's my wife getting carjacked or raped or mugged or murdered or beaten or frightened, quite frankly, that would, I've had death penalty conversations with Martin O'Malley about that. The crime problem hasn't come to my desk, but it has come to yours. Aerial surveillance, where are you on that, that when someone were to come up and hold a gun to your face, that somehow that kind of robbery could be tracked through the sky as well as in other ways? We surveil almost everything on the streets, don't we?
Yeah, so first and foremost, let me tell you, I was arrived at around 9:21 p.m. So guess what, Nesta?
It was after dark.
It's after dark. The plane doesn't work at night when we know most of the shootings and homicides in Baltimore happen. So that tells you right there everything you need to know. This is why I've been a opponent of this plane. We had it up in 2016. And as you know, we had over 300 homicides in 2016. When I asked this police commissioner and the ones before him, what was the impact of this plane when they had it? How many cases did you guys actually help to bring solve with this? The answer was maybe one, Nestor. And this is why I'm against it. Let's set aside for 1 second all of the privacy concerns and things that people have brought up. Let's just talk about effectiveness, right? So if, as you know, I've been for years saying that we need to expand the CCTV camera system and the license plate reader units in Baltimore City because we know they work, right? So if you know that this plane relies on the camera system, is how they actually track people back down, cameras and LPRs, right, in order to track these individuals, these cars, whatever, so that they can try to use it to close cases, right?
By the way, LPR, license plate registration. I just want to make sure we're right, correct?
Yeah, license plate reader unit. Sorry about that. Sorry. You know, you get like me, you start talking in acronyms.
That's all right, man. I watched Dragnet back in the day. I'm good with, 10-4. Yeah. I got you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so if you know that, right, but then as you know, and as Don knows, that our CCTV camera system is outdated, many of them are broken, many of them need to be updated, we don't have enough people monitoring them, right, in addition to there only being roughly, less than 50 LPR units in the whole city, well, investing in the plane before you fully invested in the technology that it relies on, it's a lot like buying rims and new tires for a car that the engine doesn't work, right? That to me, and what I said to them multiple times, because we know now that so much of the violence in Baltimore is happening along major thoroughfares or within a half mile of there, and we know it's being traveled, cars are being used, carjacked and used in these crimes. Well, if we know that, why wouldn't we expand LPR? So for the price that this billionaire is funding this plane for, we could every year for this 3 years that they're going to have this plane up buy 30 cameras and 40 license plate reader units a year. Every year. Something that is proven to work to reduce violence in Baltimore. The plane will not replace an actual strategy where they're targeting violent repeat offenders and removing them from neighborhoods, making sure that the gun arrests that they get aren't just a simple gun arrest, because not every gun arrest is created equal. We know who we need to be targeting. None of that is going to be replaced by this plane, especially if the infrastructure for what the plane needs to operate doesn't exist. And if it doesn't work at night, when most of your shootings happen.
So Brandon, let's build on that a little bit. And again, we're with Baltimore City Council President Brandon Scott, would like to be elected mayor on June the 2nd. If we put the plane aside for a minute, we look at other crime strategies. Where are you at this point on the future of Commissioner Harrison? Because a lot of folks, when they talk about Baltimore City, they talk about turnover in the commissioner's office. So where do you stand on that issue?
Well, first and foremost, this is what I say, and I say consistently. Every agency here, Don, is going to have to reapply and reapply based on whether they're able to fit with the team that we're going to assemble and the mission of how we're going to operate city government, first and foremost. And also, for Commissioner Harrison, I actually tell people all the time, if I was grading him as a professor, it would have to be incomplete. Right. And they say, why? I say, well, it'd be a lot like me taking over for a professor who the students didn't really know what they were supposed to do. They're not being pressed to have deep strategies on how they're going to be impacting violence in Baltimore. And when I'm able to get in there to do that and see that for even a short period of time, then we will know if he's the right person or not. But there's some things that he and I agree on, right? There's a lot in his plan that are things that I have been talking about in Baltimore for a long time, and I'm so glad that someone has come along that's going to put them in place. But I am clearly not happy with where they are today. This is why I continue to question him and his staff every week. This is why I press them on not just what they're doing, how they're doing it, making sure that, yes, they're getting guns off the street, but are they getting them from violent repeat offenders, the people that we know are actually committing violence in Baltimore? That's the kind of bigger and intensity I'm going to bring to the mayor's office.
Well, the murders haven't stopped, right, Brandon? I mean, we're in early May. We're 5-6 days into the year, and we have more murders than we have months so far. We do know the nicer the weather gets, the more people come out. Some thoughts about where literally we are in a pandemic where we're not supposed to be leaving the house and we're still having murders at an alarming rate.
Yeah, listen, we do know that they're down just a tad bit, Nestor, but it's still far too many, right? And we know that it's still unacceptable to have the level of violence that we have in the city of Baltimore. Even at this point of the year, right? So this time last year, as of this morning, there were 101 homicides in Baltimore. Today, there are 93. That's almost an 8% reduction. And non-fatal shootings, there were 225. There are 190 today, which is 15% reduction. But we still are having too much violence. Also, carjackings, home invasions, all of that stuff is still happening, and we're going to need more intensity. We've seen gun arrests pick up, but now I want to see those gun arrests pick up of people who we know are the ones committing the violence.
Brandon, how do we do that, Mr. President? How do we get guns out of the hands of these young kids on the street? Because that seems to be central to everything. How does Mayor Scott get the guns off the street?
I'm glad you said that, Don. This is something that you heard me talk about before. Back in 2018, actually, a young man who now works out in Baltimore County, the deputy county administrator, Drew Vetter, when he was director of Mayor's Office of Criminal Justice, and I worked around this bill that I actually passed, which is making straw purchases and gun traffickers part of the gun offender registry, which they created in the late 2000s. And for some reason, they didn't add people who traffic guns or straw purchase guns into the city as gun offenders, which baffled me. But we also had a hearing about guns and their origin. And at the time, the special agent in charge for ATF was Special Agent Sakata. And he and Mr. Vetter brought a map to us that showed the origin of where these guns were coming from. And what I would tell you, Don, is that if I'm seeing that guns that ended up in the hands of young men, young women in East and West Baltimore are coming from West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Virginia, which people would expect, right? But also, excuse me. Sorry, my allergies.
No worries, man. It happens.
But also, that you're seeing them come from Georgia, Texas, and even California, we all know. How many times have you guys seen a police department, BPD, go out and say, look, oh, we stopped all these drugs from coming in from the port or 95 or from wherever, right? Have you ever seen that done with guns? Because there's never been a deep strategy on finding those people. And I heard this not from Brandon Scott, but from a special agent in charge of the ATF on how we need to intensify our approach and track those individuals down, just like we're doing these big-time drug dealers. For example, if Nestor's a small corner boy selling some pills or whatever, what do the police do, Don? They try to flip that person up the chain. Why is it that we never do that with guns, and we should? We have to intensify our attack on the flow of guns into the city, treating those people who are straw purchases and gun trafficking and just like we're treating people who are using.
Brandon, you know, for you in this race, and we've talked to all the other candidates here, and there's an inside-outside thing, right? We spoke with Reverend Al Hathaway a couple weeks ago about numbers he had that some crazy number, 70, 80% of people wanted someone not already an elected official. I find that to be a little unfair to some degree, especially for those of you who've gotten up every day and served, and you're no happier with the murder number than anyone else. You've been working to try to change it. But I do feel like there is a little bit of a stigma as a city voter to say, I want change. I would say to a lot of Americans, be careful what you got for down at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue to elect a non-politician. But give us a little sense about, defend yourself, I would say, to say, well, being on the inside, you learn more than you can on the outside. But that does get used against you when things aren't getting better as quickly as people want.
Yeah, thank you for that, Nessa. And listen, people have to remember, right? I always tell people, hold me accountable, but hold me accountable for the things I had direct control over, right? Remember, Nessa, that this whole time I've been on the council, I've been trying to make Baltimore's police department a local agency so that I can have direct influence over them, right? So for me, this is what it's about. And I think that, and you know I love Reverend Hathaway, his son and I actually were relay mates on a track team growing up, so I know him as Pop, so I don't even call him Reverend Hathaway, right? So that's how far he knows me. Has known me longer than anyone else connected to Baltimore politics, right? But what I think also people have to understand is that there's an inside-outside game. But there's also individuals who the citizens of Baltimore have known and been showing them, and they see that have been on the inside that have been fighting for change and deep change, right? And that's what they see when they see me. You can see every single credible poll done about this race, I'm right there. I'm the only one that doesn't change. And no matter what they do or they say, it stays the same. This is even the poll that was leaked out the other day. What does it say? I have the highest favorability and some of the lowest negatives. This is why folks are doing what they're doing to try to bring me down, because they know that if Brandon Scott wins, it's not going to be the same. The status quo is going to have a funeral, and we're going to move on a new way forward for Baltimore that benefits all and not just some.
Well, I'm going to pick up on what you just said and what Nestor said as well, Mr. President, and I want you to give you a chance to respond to this, because what I hear and read when people analyze the candidates is just what you said. I don't hear much criticism of Brandon Scott. What I will occasionally hear is people say, you know, Brandon's a nice guy. He's got a great personal story. You can't dislike Brandon. I'm afraid he's not tough enough to run city government. What do you say to those people when they say, Brandon's just not tough enough?
I think that's funny and ironic to me. One, you don't grow up and survive at Cold Spring and Park Heights and Cold Spring and Quantico without being tough, right? And I think that when you think about that from anybody, they have to understand what I already made it through. Think about it like just that simple, Don. I'm not supposed to be here by the statistics, but I'm here. And I'm here because I know how to persevere. I know I do not back down from a challenge. Nothing scares me. I will not be bought. I will not be bossed. And that's what's actually scaring people about me. And if you talk to folks in the agencies and in city government, they know that I'm not to be trifled with. That's the people. Like, we've had multiple mayoral administrations who will tell people on background consistently, we don't fear going before the mayor. They're not going to ask us tough questions, but we don't want to go before Brandon Scott. He's going to ask us the tough questions and hold us accountable. That's the reality of what's going on, right? People have to understand, you don't have to yell and scream to get your point across. You can do that in a respectful way, but be very stern and direct with people, and I will always carry what I've been through to get me to this point with me consistently.
Brandon, we've seen a lot of leadership, you know, out in display over the last 8 weeks. Good, bad, and ugly, as Don and I have said. You can wake up in the morning and see what Larry Hogan's doing. You can see what Jack's doing from time to time. Every municipality in the country. And then we get to right around dinner time, right around 6 p.m. and Pennsylvania Avenue happens. I mean, seeing all of this leadership and who can be trusted and where the information is and what you say on Monday is consistent on Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, and then what you said 6 weeks ago actually happened 6 weeks later. Larry's done a nice job. I'm not a Republican, right? And, you know, I live here in the city, and I'm pissed about the red line and all the things that we're not getting here. But on this, there has been real leadership here on behalf of Maryland residents, and I know you've worked as hard as anyone here.
Yeah, listen, and just trying to work hard every day, man, and people get frustrated and just try to tell them, like, listen, I'm always going to be pushing the envelope, trying to make sure the people are safe and healthy, leading the efforts here to bring before the governor, the mayor, we're talking about facial coverings. I was talking about it. Before the governor talked about closing down bars and restaurants, I was talking about it. Being the first person to put out a COVID plan. Like, we have to have leaders that are able to communicate, and this is why I go live on the internet every day to communicate with people, but that can also explain to people that we can and will make it through this, but only if we work together.
Brandon, how do you close, and you've been gracious with your time, you're very, very busy, I know you have to run to another appointment, how do you close this thing? By all accounts, and every candidate has agreed, you've been no different, this race is razor thin. We don't know, somewhere between a low of 75,000 up to maybe as many as 150,000 people will vote. We don't know, it's vote by mail, it's uncharted territory. How do you close the deal, Brandon, with the pedal to the metal? How do you, what do you say to people? How do you close it out to make sure that when they fill out that ballot that comes in the mail, they fill in that bubble that says Scott?
Right. We know what we have to do, right? We have to continue to communicate with people, showing Baltimore that there is a new generation of leadership that's ready and capable, showing that new way forward, talking to voters each and every day in every way that we can, continue with our media outlets that we have, running our commercials and ads, but also just showing the leadership that I show every day, Don. That's how we're going to do it. We're going to do it on the ground. We're going to communicate, show people a new way forward for Baltimore. And I want to thank you both for allowing me to speak with you this evening.
Brandon, appreciate it, man. City Council, I have to call you Mr. President. I mean, Don teaches me all this, you know, parliamentary procedure and etiquette and all that. I remember when you were just Brandon, but that's okay, City Council President. One day maybe we'll call you Mayor. Good luck here in the next couple of weeks. I know it hasn't been an easy position to be in leadership here the last 8 weeks. I tip my cap to you and everybody out there trying to keep us safe. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Mr. President, thank you very much.
Brandon Scott joining us here on Baltimore Positive. We want to encourage everybody to get back down to Fadley's, where we had crab cakes with Brandon about 6 months ago. You can ship them. You can curbside them. And, of course, they're coming to Catonsville as well, where our other sponsors on the other side of the parking lot at State Fair, where you can get the chicken and waffles to go, as well as some chicken wings to go. I miss the chicken and waffles more than I miss the shrimp and grits, believe it or not, but not as much as my wife misses the Bloody Marys on weekends. State Fair over in Catonsville. Evan is there. They are there. Curbsided out, as well as our friends at Moeller & Gary Realty. Jeff Moeller was my guest at Baltimore Positive last month and the buyatoyota.com audio vault and WNST. We talked about real estate. Real estate is still happening. It's real. It's being sold. It's being transacted online, virtually. And Moeller & Gary can help you with that. We have had an incredible mix here of all of the candidates running for mayor. We've talked to all the university presidents. We've talked to arts and culture leaders here and museum leaders. All of it at Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. He is Don Moeller, former Baltimore County Executive. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. We're keeping calm. We're staying local. And we're always, always Baltimore Positive.